Welcome to the Spirit-Led Podcast, your guide on a journey to full enlightenment in this beautiful life. I'm your host, Joan Hope Craig. Each episode, we explore spiritual wisdom, life's purpose, and the profound impact of daily choices on our personal growth and the world. Welcome.
I'm excited to be here. Thank you so much for this opportunity.
Yeah, well, let me introduce you to the audience. So Ellie Hadsall is a Vedic fire practitioner. She's ordained in the Kriya Yoga tradition by Roy Eugene Davis. Introduced to transformational Vedic fire ceremonies in 1996, for 2 years she privately practiced to prove their potency to herself and then began to teach. She has taught hundreds of students in the United States and across the globe, many of whom are now fire practitioners in their own communities. And today, we're going to learn all about Agnihotra, the Vedic fire ceremony. So welcome again, Ellie. Before we talk about Vedic fire ceremony, and I hope I pronounced it right,
that's correct.
Tell us just the easy question, which is where you live and also your hometown.
I grew up on a farm in Kansas, about 15 miles outside of Salina, Kansas, near a little town of 80. We knew all the people who lived there and all their dogs and cats' names, and married and lived a variety of places in the United States, traveled quite a bit, but ended up now we're in Fort Wayne, Indiana, which is in northeast Indiana, up near the Michigan and Ohio borders, and live here with my husband and just a wonderful community.
Oh, good. Well, thanks for the context, because I hope that we have listeners all over the world, so they might not know where Indiana is. Well, great. Well, first of all, did I say it right? Agnihotra?
Yes, that's correct. It's said in different ways. It's the two words are sometimes put together in one long word, Agnihotra, and sometimes it's separated into two words. It matters not.
Well, I didn't know anything about this. I'd actually never heard the word until I heard of you and read your book. So maybe some of our listeners have not either. Could you give us just 101 level, super beginner, like what is a Vedic fire ceremony? What is Agnihotra? And what do we need to know? The basics.
It's first, I'll kind of speak to the technicalities of it and then its benefits, which we'll go into that more, I'm sure. But it's an ancient practice from over 3,000 years ago. The Vedas have different sciences. They have the science of meditation, the science of fire, the science of sound, the science of even down to Ayurveda, which is the science of life, and so, which is something else that I've studied extensively and lived with. So Agnihotra is one of those ancient fire ceremonies that integrates fire and sound together to have a vibrational effect. So it's performed in a small or large, but usually in a small 6-inch pyramid that has a steeped and a flat bottom. It's an inverted pyramid. And you burn the fire, you burn cow dung, nothing else. In India, there's a particular wood you can burn. I don't know the name of it. It's rare. You can't buy it in the United States. So I have always worked with and taught cow dung. And you use ghee, and you use a specific chant, and Agnihotra is special in that it is only sung precisely when the sun rises and precisely when the sun sets, because there is a vibrational effect that sweeps across an area when that happens. So there's about a 2-minute span where this energy sweeps across as the sun rises or the sun sets, technically as the earth moves, of course, but that's why it's essential to do it at those times.
Could I ask a little more about that? Can you feel it yourself? Can you feel the energy at those times?
Yes, I can. Now, I did not originally, but I've had several teachers from different lineages. And my first one to introduce it to me was a Kriya Yoga Acharya from the Himalayas. So that's how I was first introduced to Agnihotra and fire ceremony.
Maybe even before we talk about the benefits, because so many of our listeners are Kriya yogis, could you talk about how they relate? Because I didn't remember from your book that the person who introduced it to you was actually a Kriya yogi as well. How does Kriya relate to this practice?
the practice of Kriya Yoga is the practice of living in a way that aligns you with divine spirit, divine energy, so that you are in that flow. Roy used to talk about the level, there's the way of living with effort, with less effort, with no effort, you know, the different effort levels that we live in existence. And when you can move into a vibrational field that is in that divine flow of that enlivening energy that supports the existence of all, then things are effortless. And Agnihotra creates that vibration. So different chants and different fires, and there's different ones, they each create a different kind of effect. And they can be very precise, down to one for cancer or one for sick horses, or there's, I don't know those. But when you do this chanting, it creates this effect. And so Kriya Yoga, it honors all traditions, and it recognizes that as long as it is a authentic spiritual tradition that is in alignment with those spiritual principles, that path will get you there. And there's many reasons why I ended up finding Kriya Yoga, or I would say Kriya Yoga actually found me, as how that happened for me. But as I practiced it, I never knew anything about fire ceremony, but I did go to visit friends who were Hindu in the Hindu community, and they did fire ceremonies, and I always enjoyed them. But I wasn't interested at all in that practice. I am not a bhakti yogi by nature. I don't practice ritual a lot. So that's just, I'm more a jnana yoga. I'm not even a jnana yoga, beg your pardon. I'm not that either. I am not one who's scholarly and great study, but I am one who believes in karma and practice. So Kriya Yoga, when I learned it through Roy, was about living it. Absolutely 100% total commitment and focus to practicing those principles until you were established in them. Roy used to say, practice until you're established. And I love that. And so when I heard, I can go into it if you want, but there's this 20 different synchronicities happened to get me to meet with this man who was an acharya from India.
It might be worth telling the audience, and because I found that story interesting from your book of how you ended up. Because like you said, you weren't looking for this. You had experienced some fire ceremonies. You were like, huh, I'm not really a type of person that does a lot of rituals. I just try to live my yoga every day, every minute. You're just trying to live the practices. So you weren't looking for it. Tell the story about how it showed up for you. Or like you said, it found you.
I'll try to keep it brief. But in addition to Kriya Yoga, I had prior to that and alongside that studied other traditions, because I had always been taught establish yourself in Kriya Yoga. Then if you learn from other traditions, you can have discernment with what is so and what is not so. And I lived in communities where there was a lot of Native American Indian practices. So I was reading a book about a Native American Indian medicine man. And in that book, he had participated as a member of a council of world religious leaders representing different religions who met at the United Nations. And in that book, he talked about having the experience of meeting other swamis and the similarities of the different traditions that all at the heart said the same thing. And I loved that concept that all authentic traditions at the heart often have the same thing, but they've just been experienced and expressed in different ways. So when I was reading a certain, that part of that book, I got this cosmic feeling that I get when I know that something is a direct knowledge. And it was like something, and I got this thought that I was going to be at one of those events with the UN. Now, at the time, I had two children. My husband traveled. I was a woman in Texas. You know, like, I don't have the money. I don't have, you know, that's just not me to go to do that. So I just don't see how that would ever happen. Well, I won't go into all the detail because 20 steps is too many, but I did, someone handed me a newspaper that they said, I'm supposed to give you this newspaper. I don't know why. In that newspaper was an article about a group called Multi-Faith Exchange that was in Dallas, Texas. And they were people from each different religious tradition got together and visited each other's events, synagogues, temples, whatever they had. And I knew that that was just, I wanted to be involved with that. So I honored these traditions, and Roy honored all traditions. We have the Temple of All Faiths at the CSA headquarters that honors these different traditions. So I contacted them and they said, well, what religion? And I said, well, it's really not a religion. It's a science, and it's Kriya Yoga. Never heard of Kriya Yoga. Tell me more. And I explained it to them. And he was like, well, yes, we don't have anything like that. Come and join us. So I did. My husband and I were with that group at an Islam at a mosque. And there were 10 different tables where we shared food with each other. They invited us all to eat with them after their ceremony, morning ceremony. We just went and chose this table and sat down. Well, then sitting across the table from us came the leader of the mosque, the imam, and the man who was head of the multi-faith exchange group. And they started a conversation, and their conversation was, oh my gosh, we have been asked to host a United Nations World Religious Leaders Symposium here. Oh my gosh, that's going to be a big job. We're going to have a lot of volunteers. And Ellie got up, went around the table and said, I volunteer. So many, many things happened. But as that symposium was being organized, David, the man who was coordinating at the head of it, called me and he said, Ellie, I got a call from a group in India. It's an Acharya in the Himalayas who never leaves the soil of India. His purpose is to hold the spiritual aspects to govern all of India and to hold that with his heart and his practices. And yet for this, he thinks it is most important. And for the first time ever, he's going to leave the soil of India and come to this symposium. And he's a Kriya Yogi. You're a Kriya Yogi. Do you know of him? I didn't. I asked Roy. Roy didn't know of him. But David pursued other channels and discovered he was the real thing. So he was there. And I got assigned to his group of 20 religious leaders. And they asked me to be their recorder to take notes. And I met him, and I met some amazing, the representative of the Pope. I met other people. And when he saw me, something happened. I don't know how to explain it. I just had this electrical charge. And he smiled, and he said, I'm going to Houston. And in Houston, with a group of people who are sponsoring me, and we are going to do some blessing ceremonies. I would like you to come. So I said, okay, yes, I will. So my husband and I went, and he did a fire ceremony, and he began chanting, and I cried. I was home. Something there. It's the same feeling I had when years before I had read Autobiography of a Yogi. When I read Autobiography of a Yogi, I got into the third and fourth chapter and I was weeping all the way through because I felt I'd come home. So I had that same feeling with this. And so I knew there's three things in my life that have been key. One is meditation, one is Kriya Yoga, and one is fire ceremony. And so he got me started. He didn't know who could. I asked him if I could do it. I'm a woman. I'm in America. I live in Texas. Can I do a fire ceremony? Because I had only seen men do them, and I had heard it was very protected. And he looked at me and he said, yes, you learn this and you teach it. And I said, can you teach me? And he said, no, I don't teach it. I said, well, who will teach me? And he said, you'll find someone. And we had more conversation, but I asked him about Kriya Yoga. I said, I am ordained by Roy Eugene Davis through the lineage of Yogananda. And it has been such a blessing for me. You're doing Kriya Yoga. You're going to be initiating people. How does this work with me and you? And he said, you are where you're supposed to be. You're practicing, you're following the lineage of Yogananda is what you're to do. You are in your right place. You just bring this in with it. You bring the fire ceremony in with it because they are they belong together. The ceremony enhances meditation. It enhances your practice of the yamas and the niyamas, the virtues and the Gita. This practice will support you in all of your life's work. And we had a very thorough conversation, and I took it from there.
So you had this deep inner knowing and intuition, powerful emotional response when you read about it, the United Nations group of the religions getting together, and then it showed up in your life. This is the event I'm supposed to go to. And then while you're there, this teacher comes into your life, and it sounds like you might have had some concerns about did it mesh okay with the practices you already had and the energy you were carrying through from your ordination. And it sounds like the teacher said, yes, this is not a conflict at all. It's actually, they enhance each other.
Yes, correct.
Yeah. Correct. Yeah. Wow. So can you talk about some of the benefits of the fire ceremony? You mentioned about the vibration and the fire together with the sunrise and sunset kind of creates this powerful energetic moment, but what benefits can happen? And while you're at it, if you want to share what benefits you've experienced.
I will share some benefits that happened, and then I'm happy to get into some personal experiences, because for me, hearing other people's stories always helps me understand something better. You had asked earlier, when that moment comes, that energy sweeps across the land at sunrise or sunset, do I experience it? I can if I'm really, really quiet, but it requires a very quiet mind. But one of my fire ceremony teachers, Vasant Pranjape, when I asked him one time, in early days, this is me, I'm a little bit frisky at times with my teachers. Like, come on, in the early days when they were doing this 3,000 years ago, they didn't have satellite clocks. They didn't have clocks. How did they know? And he just patiently looked at me and he kind of smiled and he said, now you grew up on a farm, right? Yes. He said, do you remember when you were little, before your mind was filled with adult thoughts? Do you remember noticing something different just at sunrise and just at sunset? And I don't know whether it's him and his energy or what, but I all of a sudden had a memory of being a little girl sleeping on the farm. I used to like to sleep with my head in the windowsill. I'd push my bed over by the window and then I'd put my pillow in the windowsill, and that's how I would sleep, so I could see the stars and listen to the animals and everything. And I can remember waking up one morning and just feeling this like love fill my heart, just like, wow. And then I kind of thought about it, but he said, that was the moment. He says, nature knows it. And he says, if you watch carefully, and he told me some things to look for. He said, at that moment, the plant, if you watch a plant, it will just slightly move. And what causes that is, in that 2-minute span, the stomata of a plant, which is the breathing holes in the leaves, will open slightly. And they'll remain open, and then they close back to their normal size. Same things happens with everything that is enlivened. Everything opens a little bit and what happens in that is that divine energy comes in that is untainted, pure. And the sun brings it, and then the world swallows, you know, the world changes that, and the energy goes back to the regular energy, but there's that span. He said, doing the ceremony during that time greatly enhances the ceremony. He said, because the ceremony, you take the copper pyramid. Copper is a conductor of electricity, right? You take the copper pyramid, and it's in a particular geometric shape that ties in with sacred geometry. You burn the cow dung. Cow dung is a natural disinfectant, which people don't realize. And this blows people's minds. Let's talk about cow dung for a minute. Cow dung is a natural disinfectant. and it reduces the bacteria in the air and the surroundings. So you think about in India, the cow is sacred. There's so many reasons that it's sacred. Another one is that it provides milk, which provides cream, which provides butter, which provides ghee, and ghee is also used in the ceremony. So when you burn cow dung, you actually put energy into the air that is antibacterial. And even more than that, it dissipates and neutralizes radioactivity. This ceremony will dispel radioactivity. So along those lines, when Chernobyl nuclear plant exploded in Russia, there were people in the settled area around there that had been nomadic, and they did Agnihotra fire ceremony. Interestingly enough, there's a lot of it in Russia. So they were doing it, and their homes and all did not have cancer. They didn't have the effects of the radioactivity the way other people did. Russia, in its early years of space program, used cow dung in with the other aspects of the coating they put on the astronauts' capsules, so that when they re-entered the Earth's atmosphere upon landing, the radioactivity didn't affect them. In some cultures, they even put it on wounds. Now, I grew up on a farm, and we had cow dung all over the place. I didn't know any of that. You know, had no clue. And then it uses rice. And rice has a particular energy. Dr. Ladd, Vasant Ladd, who headed up the Ayurvedic Institute, also was one of my teachers of Ayurveda. And he said, oh, the rice grain, if you put it under a microscope, it looks like a little galaxy. It's so cute. He was so funny. He was so sweet. He still is living, but he's so sweet. So the rice, it has some oils in it that are released. And I don't know the details of that, but there it is released. The chant, Sanskrit chanting, if there's a chant that we sing, there are words to it that are Sanskrit words, and you can translate it roughly into English. So then people say, well, here's what this prayer means. But the real power or potency or benefit of a chant is you are toning sounds. You are emitting vibrational sounds, and it's those vibrations that have the effect. So when you do Agnihotra, there's a specific chant you do, and you do it precisely at sunrise, and you only chant it once because you want to capture that moment of power and potency. If you chant it over and over again, then that begins to disrupt the energy field that you created with the original chant. So you only chant it once. And the fire ceremony itself, I'll explain in a moment, it's been scientifically tested. So what happens is it emits a powerful flash of energy that goes up through the atmosphere and brings back down that pure energy, and then sends it out in a radius. It's like an upside down vortex, kind of a tornado, sends it out in a 2-mile radius. And in that field, as long as the fire is burning, that field holds, and all life forms, identity, down to the cells in our body, return to their originally intended purpose. So if I sit there and I have a dis-ease in my body, while I'm sitting there in that space during that period of time, my cells remember what their true identity is. And everything seeks to go back to its originally intended perfection. So if there is a plant that is in that field, that plant begins to heal. And if you do it consistently, morning and evening, you begin to establish a more temporary field there that holds more clearly for longer periods of time, and things in that begin to heal. So in my practice of it, when I first learned to do it, I knew how I felt when I chant, the chant was done, and I knew how I felt, and I just felt myself so full of love. It's like I didn't have to meditate. I didn't have to work to feel love and compassion. It was just who I was. I was merged in something that was so beautiful. And then after a while, that kind of wears off, and then I'm back to Ellie again. But so I determined that I was not going to teach it or speak of it to people until I could prove to myself that it did these things. I wasn't going to buy into what other people said. I just wasn't. And at that time, I didn't know about the effects of dung, and I didn't know any of these details. I just knew the ceremony, and I knew to chew it and test it out. And I did it consistently for 2 months, almost three, every morning and evening. And the results were so amazing. I believed it, and I began doing it regularly and teaching it, and have ever since. So you may have some questions, but I'm happy to go into what some of those effects were.
Wow. Well, maybe I could just sum up some of the things I heard you say is, and you answered actually some questions that I had planned to ask you, which is kind of like, how do we know it's the ceremony and not just you're stopping being busy and meditating and praying twice a day? But what I'm hearing you say is that actually there's some chemical and electrical and maybe astronomical impacts from the copper, from the cow dung, from the ghee, from the rice, from the timing. The chanting is a vibration. So there's actually some physical,
yes,
impact with the metaphysical. It's,
yes,
both.
Yes.
And that's helpful, because I was a little skeptical. I guess I was feeling frisky too.
Yeah.
Having not ever experienced it and just reading about it. So when you were practicing that first 2 or 3 months, what were some of the things you started to notice that, as you said, kind of proved it to yourself?
One of the first things we noticed is one of the things they taught me was that the ceremony itself has this healing effect, but the ash that results from it does as well. So after the fire burns, if you collect that ash and you sift through it to get any chunks that were in the dung out of it, and you have just that ash can be used for healing effects. And so I'm like, oh yeah, really, right. So, okay. So that fall, we lived in Texas. We had St. Augustine grass in our front yard, and grubs had damaged it severely to where there was a great big patch. I'd say it's maybe 10 by 10, roughly, that was dead grass that were damaged by grubs. And then autumn came, fall came, and the grubs were not doing their thing anymore, but it was dead grass. And literally, I had gone out and pulled up pads of it, just hands full of it, and their roots were all chewed through. So then we left the grass on top just to protect the soil through the winter, and then said, okay, come spring, we'll dig it all up and we'll put new grass down. Well, one day I decided, well, I'm just going to test this ash. So I took some out and I sprinkled it over that dead grass area, and then came in the house, and I had to wait for springtime to test for this test to work to see if it really helped the grass at all. And I forgot about it. And then I went on and I tried other things. And another thing that I did was I went out, we had a cottonwood tree, and one whole half of it had a huge branch that was dead from cottonwood borers. I had checked with the arborist in the nursery, and he said, well, we'll have to cut that branch off come spring. He said, let's just leave it over winter, and come spring, we'll do that. And I'm like, okay. So I decided I'd take the ash, and I went out and I poked in all the holes that the borers had made, and I coated the trunk of the tree with ash, and I flung it with my hand up into the branches and stuff, and then forgot about it. Then spring came, and one March day, our daughter came running in the house and said, Mom, come out and look at the yard. And I said, what? She said, you come out here and look. So I went out. And there was new St. Augustine grass coming up among the dead ones. They had established roots somehow, and was alive again. And some of it was what the dead grass that had been there before now had roots going down. And I couldn't prove that it was the ash, but I couldn't disprove it either. So I said to myself, well, maybe that was it. So then that spring, the cottonwood tree, the branch that had been dead, was alive and putting out green shoots, just like the other side of the tree. And I'm like, now, wait a minute. Okay, so I went and I talked to our nurseryman. And I said, okay, if I have St. Augustine grass, and I explained to him what it was like, I said, I can't do anything to bring that back. He said, oh, no way. You'd have to remove all that, plow up the dirt, reseed it, or put in new grass. Okay. I said to about the cottonwood tree. And he looked at me and he said, what have you been doing? He said, no, a tree, it was dead from borers. It can't come back. Okay, so this kind of thing began to happen consistently. Some things happened that I hadn't put ash on, but we had a vine that grew on the fence between our house and the neighbors. And that neighbor lady was head of the local garden club. And Mary and I had seen this vine, and we both watered it because we felt sorry for it. It was just this little green vine, and every year it would just come out and it wouldn't do anything, but we both decided we'd just water it and, you know. Well, the next spring, that thing grew, it covered the fence, and it had white blooms on it. And Mary said, what happened to that vine? Mary was not someone I thought would understand what I was doing, burning cow dung. So I said, I don't know, but it sure is pretty. And she told her garden club about this vine that all of a sudden bloomed, and nobody knew what it was or what kind it was, but they all thought that was just a miracle. So those kinds of things happen consistently with our home and our neighborhood. And then that happened there when we lived in Texas, and we moved to Albuquerque, and we lived there for 15 years. And amazing things happened in Albuquerque as well. One of those, I will tell, I was doing Agnihotra consistently in our backyard. And when we moved into that house, the entire backyard, when we went to dig in it to plant grass and all, it was just filled with weeds. It was a mess. We went to dig it and we discovered there was a layer of asbestos shingles that had been laid over the ground at one point in time, we assumed, to control weeds by some former owner. It was so horrible. We dug them up, got rid of them, and to heal the soil, we spread Agnihotra ash, and I did ceremony regularly, and we added other things to it to make it healthy. I planted sunflowers to help heal the soil that was supposed to grow 4 to 5 feet high, and they grew 14 feet high.
14 feet.
Yeah. I have pictures of it. It was a forest of sunflowers. People came just to look at our sunflower forest.
I'd be interested to, I'm interested to share this and hear from, maybe if people comment on the podcast, if there's other gardeners out there that have had similar experiences. As you're sharing some of these, I'm wondering, Ellie, if you would feel comfortable sharing what you experienced as far as like meditation and clarity. I remember that Roy and other teachers often have said, you know, the way to tell if you're awakening, if you're waking up, is, do you feel more clear? Do you feel more peaceful? Are things working more easily in your life? You mentioned the levels of effort. So what did you notice in yourself?
I will have to be honest in that I already was at a level of feeling effortless. When I studied with Roy and Roy said, do this, I did it. And I already had reached a point in my life where I had worked, I'd been through some real trauma, and I had really worked to become established in even-mindedness and all. And I'm not saying I was, I had a full-time job. I had kids. We also had a Center for Spiritual Awareness of North Texas for 9 years that we ran. So I had a lot going on, but I was constantly practicing the virtues and practicing those ways. So what I felt it did for me was to when I needed to be more even-minded, or I was not in the state of being that I wanted or needed to be, my girls would tell me. They'd say, "Mom, you need to go meditate." So I found that when I did fire ceremony regular, I remained in that meditative space consistently without having to do my meditations to get there. However, I still did my meditations because they had brought me to where I was. And I, to this day, since 1973, I have meditated every morning and every evening consistently, almost daily. That's another aspect of my life. So Agni Hotra really has supported that. I think more than anything, I have found that it has created an environment in our home and in our yard and in our neighborhood that has been more, help those people also be at that level of awareness, because neighbors will change. Where we've done, we had neighbors that were separated and they yelled at each other and they were having all kinds of issues. And I met it when I was doing my Agni Hotra regularly. One day the husband was back there and he had been gone for, several months. And I said, "Well, you're back." He said, "Yeah, we're going to try it again." He said, "I don't know what it is." His wife had remained in the home right next door to us. He said, "I don't know what it is with her, but she used to be, she used to yell all the time and be all fiery." He said, "Well, she's sweeter. She's just sweeter. And we're able to talk now. And she doesn't take things. She's not so touchy. And we're working through things with a counselor. And it's just looking good." Now, I can't prove that it was Agni Hotra, but I do know I'd lived next to that door for all those years. And that woman had been her personality, and she was different. She was changing. Again, there many of the things that I tell as evidence can't be proven. It's same thing with meditation, really. I can say I meditate every day and I have this experience in my life and I wouldn't be where I am without meditation. And someone would say, "Well, prove it." I can't. But the actual scientific experiments they have done with Agni Hotra, where they have taken petri dishes with bacteria in them. And let me say, Agni Hotra doesn't kill anything. It just renders it harmless. So that's the only thing I know how to say. It does not kill. It's totally harmonious, but it renders it harmless, or it controls it. It brings it to a natural balance so it doesn't overwhelm other things and harm them. So when they had petri dish with bacteria, and then they did another one with viruses, but they had it, and then they did the fire ceremony. First of all, they had one where they did no fire ceremony. Then they did one where they just meditated with it. And they did one where they did the ceremony, but they didn't do the chanting. They had one where they did the ceremony, but they didn't do it at sunrise or sunset. See what I'm saying? They took all the variables and they took away one of the pieces of it and did the rest. And none of them had any effect. But when they did all of it together, the bacteria ceased to grow.
That reminds me of a science fair experiment I did in, I think it was third or fourth grade, with three plants. And one was listening to classical music and one was listening to rock music and one was just in my bedroom, with me with no music at those times of day, and the one with classical music thrived. So it sounds like the petri dish had a similar effect, or the ceremony combined with meditation.
Yeah, that's correct.
Well, what I'd love to go to next, if you don't mind, Ellie, could you give people a sense of the actual ceremony itself, like what it's like? And what it would be like if they were doing this in their, like, in their day, like what happens first thing in the morning?
Okay. First thing is sunrise and sunset times keep changing. So you have to adjust your morning routine or your evening routine to adapt to those changes in time. So this time of year, sunrise is very late in the day. In the middle of summer, it's very, very early in the day. So you have to adjust your time to that. So for, say, I'm going to do it this time of year. When I do it now, I get up. And I have a morning routine where brushing my teeth, splashing water on my face, meditating, doing my yoga, and doing Agni Hotra. And so those three get moved back and forth depending on when Agni Hotra time is. So I go and I sit down. I have my kit and I have my fire pyramid. I sit it down in front of me. I get my cow dung. I spread ghee on it. I put the dung in the pyramid. And it's just little pieces of it, like little bricks of cow dung that are, that's how they're made is another story. You can buy them and make them yourself. And you put the ghee on it. And I tell people, just like buttering your bread, buttering your sandwich, you put the ghee on it and you put them in the pyramid so that the air flows around it. And then you take the rice and you put the rice in your palm and you add the ghee to it so that it's well oiled down so it'll burn easily. Then about 5 minutes before sunrise time, I light the fire. And it gets started and it has a nice burning glow to it and it smells wonderful. I think this is another thing that surprises people. The odor of burning cow dung actually is kind of sweet. It doesn't smell like wood at all. It isn't sharp and acrid. It's kind of sweet and soft, especially with ghee in there because ghee works with it. And so I have a nice fire burning. And then when the actual time comes, I begin the chant and I'll demo it in a moment. I begin the chant and you sing swaha twice during the chant, and swaha is an energy of offering, giving to. So when you're doing the chant, when you chant swaha, you give one offering of the rice and the ghee, and then you remit a chant, and then you have another offering of rice and the ghee, and that's it. You just chant this little chant. It's very brief, and you put the rice in there, and then you sit in silence while the fire burns and the rice and all is burning. And during that period of time, it holds that field that I was speaking of early, where all negativity is neutralized. Then when the fire is finished burning, that field of energy is actually drawn down. And I don't know how this works. There's Vedic scientists who can explain it. Well, draw down into the ash, and the ash contains that healing energy. Then after the fire is over and it's finished, I let the pyramid sit there. It's still hot from the thing. The ash is still hot. And I just go about my day and do whatever. And then later when it's cooled down, I come and I empty that ash into a jar that I keep until I get sufficient amount of ash. And then I sift it to get any stones out of it or sand. And then that ash I store and then I use it to make healing ointments with ghee and different things. Or I sprinkle it on my plants. I sprinkle it on my gardens. There's in the book, I explain there's a lot you can do with that ash.
And so the whole thing, I think you said it could take 15 or 20 minutes, or you can, of course, make a longer one if you want to. But the basic, the most simple version of it is about 15 minutes?
Yeah, 10 minutes? To 15 minutes.
Oh, 10 to 15 minutes.
Yeah,
okay.
10 to 15. Well, first you sit down. It takes you about, depending, for me, it takes me about 5 minutes to get set up. If you're new, it's going to take you 10 minutes to get set up. And then when the fire, you actually start the ceremony, it depends on how long it takes for the fire to burn out. And I have learned from experience that can vary a lot. I have had fires with a little tiny bit of dung because I was almost out of dung and it burned forever. And then I've had other fires that I thought, ooh, this is going to be a nice long one and I'll get all settled up and it's gone in 5 minutes. So depends on the airflow and humidity and all.
Well, I'm asking some of this just if someone wanted to start, so, and they can do it inside or outside?
You can do it in or out. So if you, it's like a candle or incense, it's going to put soot on your walls. It's eventually going to do that. So if you do it inside, I always, when I teach people, I say you want to do it near a window that, you know, that it'll flow out or if you have a fireplace, that's ideal. When we've had a fireplace, I empty it out and then I put the fire in the fireplace and open the damper and it just flows right up the chimney. The smoke and the effect will go through walls. It'll go through mountains. So you don't have to worry about that. You aren't getting the smoke is healing. But I say just go out and spread around the neighborhood. That's fine. I get the effect from sitting there. I recommend people do it somewhere where they can, after the ceremony, then they have a fan that will blow that out of the house and not have it build up. Some people who are dedicated to this to the degree they actually have a room in their home that they do the fire in and they don't worry about any of that. I normally, in nice weather, do it outdoors.
Right. And so I know you have a retreat coming up at Center for Spiritual Awareness this summer in June. Tell people about that retreat and what it will be like, because I think probably a lot of our listeners have been to CSA already, some have not. What will the schedule be like as far as, you know, the timing of activities and what kind of activities will be on the schedule?
Okay. By the way, I'm so appreciative of being invited to do this at CSA. It's such an honor to me to come back and do this and to give it a SIVA. It means so much to me. So it'll be Monday through Thursday. Every morning, I will be doing a sunrise meditation, a sunrise Agnihotra. And that'll be around 6:15, roughly. I think I checked with in that area at that time, roughly around 6:15 in the morning. So all the ones who are willing to get up and do that can join me with that. Then Reverend Gadway will be doing something from 10 to 11, explaining Kriya Yoga, introducing people to that. And then there'll be a break for lunch from 11 to 1. 11 to 2, actually, there will be a lunchtime. And then from 2 to 4, I will be teaching about Agnihotra. I'll be teaching how to do the ceremony. I'll be giving lots of details on its history, how to perform it, what supplies you need, and show people how to do it, answer lots and lots of questions that everyone will have. Then there's another break of a couple of hours. And then during those breaks, people have free time. People who know CSA, they can do whatever they want during that time. They'll be fixing food or doing whatever they want to. Then from 6 to 7, I'm going to do a fire ceremony, an extended one. I'm going to do Triambakam, which is a healing. It's called the Universal Healing Prayer that helps release people from all attachments. I do it for blessings and transitions, and I just general for communities to do healing or homes that want healing and cleansing. And then I'm also another night, I'm going to do Gayatri, and the Gayatri mantra brings in divine light. There will be chanting. The people can chant with me, or they can just sit and enjoy the energy. They will definitely feel the energy shift in all of these fire ceremonies. They will definitely feel it. Then in the evening at sunset, I will again do Agnihotra. So there will be fires three times during the day. There will be fires. People can experience fire ceremonies. And then there will be the teaching in the afternoon. Then on Wednesday, there's a free afternoon where there's no classes or anything like that. Then on Thursday, it'll be the same thing every morning on Thursday. I will be doing another class in the afternoon on Agnihotra. And that evening, I'm going to do a Rudra fire ceremony. And the Rudra is a longer chant. I don't know it. I play the music. I play one of my teachers chanting it. But it's a prayer for healing and honoring Mother Earth and all of her inhabitants. And it's absolutely beautiful.
Wow, it sounds like a real opportunity to experience the fire ceremonies.
Yes.
Just to kind of receive it. It sounds yes. like to receive the experience and to find out, to feel in your own self if this is something that, I want to take this home. I want to do aspects of this at home. So yes. A really great opportunity to have like an immersion
yes.
practice with it. Yeah. Well, and if someone couldn't come on retreat with you this summer, what are other ways they could learn about this or experience it to try it out?
Depending on where they live, there may be somebody who does the ceremonies in their area or in a larger area near them. There's more of it going on back east in Virginia and Boston area. There's more people doing it there. There aren't as many in the center part of the country. I'm not familiar with the other coastline. So they can just contact me through my website and I'll help connect them with somebody who can. I think the most, I do ceremonies for public wherever we live. There are people who attend just for the energy of the ceremony. And there are people who attend because that's what a practice they want to do. Either way is just fine for me. I have no attachment to somebody doing it or not doing it. I just love to share it, and it's very supportive of one's meditation and their journey for enlightenment.
Right. So whether someone's been to CSA before or not, maybe people have been to CSA already on a meditation journey and path, and if not, maybe just thinking about going, it sounds like an interesting week to to attend because it's unique. It's really different than just a traditional Kriya
Yes.
week where we don't have those fire ceremonies going on. It could be a chance, like we said, to kind of explore it, experience it. I'm certainly curious about it and would love to experience it. And then you mentioned your website. So how can people stay in touch with you if they want to learn more about this? But also I should share, and maybe we should say the book, the title of the book is Agnihotra Haven or Haven?
Haven. Haven and Haven and Heaven all have the same root.
Haven on Earth. I love that. And Haven means fire ceremony.
Yes, that's correct.
I love that. The book is called Agnihotra, Haven on Earth, and we'll make sure to link to your website. But and you also have other books, which I saw you've written various kinds of books, some maybe more fiction or memoir style, and some about other health topics. So if someone wanted to find out more about you or just stay in touch, find out where you're teaching, what's the best way?
My website, elliehadsall.com.
Okay. And we'll make sure to link to that. Is there anything else you want to share today? I mean, you're a wealth of knowledge, and I can tell this is a true passion, like exploding out of you. It's bubbling up from you in a beautiful, joyous way. Is there anything else you want to share about Agnihotra or anything else?
I think what I think is most important for anyone listening to this is we all aspire to be totally liberated. And we all begin that journey at a different spot on the road. And we all choose different roads to get there. And there's no right way to do it. I think making mistakes is marvelous, absolutely marvelous. I would not be where I am if I hadn't made mistakes and learn from them. And sometimes we don't learn for a while. We have to experience it over and over again. But I believe that I am, you know, we are each of us. Roy used to talk about the enlivening energy that flows. We are an individualized aspect of that divine energy that flows, that is all of existence. We are a unique individualized aspect. And I want everyone to honor their uniqueness, whether they think they're, forget about whether you're right, wrong, good, bad, successful, unsuccessful. Those things are outside of us. What really, who we really are is within our spirit, our joyful soul, expressing here on this planet, having a journey to learn and to share and to empower others and to make mistakes, to not judge ourselves and know that you're worthy. You're worthy. You're just totally worthy and beautiful wherever you're at.
That's a beautiful message. I'm receiving it personally. I hope our beloved divine listeners are also receiving it. And so in closing, would you share with us a closing prayer or an affirmation or any way you'd like to leave our listeners? And then I won't speak again. So we'll let them kind of end with whatever you want to give them.
Okay.
And thank you for being on the podcast.
You're welcome. Thank you so much. Thank you. Honor. As you leave this moment in time to embrace the next moment in time, the only thing that you need to do is acknowledge that you are a divine being having unique experience. Whether you feel that or not doesn't take away the fact that you are a divine being having a unique experience. And I would ask you in each moment, if you can just live the highest and best that you know in that moment, not perfection, not ideal, just the highest and best that you can pull together in that moment, and be committed to doing that each moment, step by step. You're going to get there. You can do this. I believe in you and the divine, and all of the universe supports you in that journey. Love and blessings to you. Namaste.
Thank you for tuning in to the Spirit-Led Podcast. Special thanks to our producer, Monty Craig. Please subscribe to catch upcoming episodes. For support in your awakening journey, visit our sponsor, the Center for Spiritual Awareness, at csa-davis.org. We offer online group meditations, classes, and in-person retreats at our headquarters in Lakemont, Georgia. Once again, that's csa-davis.org. Until next time, remember your pure essence of being, an eternal relationship with the infinite.